Hello, Annie Trenders. Welcome to the Girl Taku, hosted by the ladies of Anime Trending. If you're looking for nice tea and deep dive analysis about otaku themes, you've come to the right place. We love our conversation and discussion, and we're back with another fun topic on the table. My name is Gracie, and I'm joined by...
Hello, I am Isabel, and...
This is Agnes.
So without further ado, the Girl Taku today will be another MBTI analysis. We're just kind of going down the list of the 16 and whittling down until we have none left. And one of our listeners specifically requested to us that they would like to hear us talk about INFJs next. So that is exactly what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about INFJ anime characters. Now, as a reminder, I do like to stress this because, you know, we have new listeners all the time. This is purely our opinion. There is no exact science for this. I mean, personality can be quite hard to have an exact science, to be precise. And on top of that, we are talking about fictional characters. So there's even more of a personal analysis here going on. But with that being said, this follows a similar format as all the prior episodes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read out the list of 12 INFJ anime characters that I've selected for the girls to pick. And then I will introduce the ones that the girls picked to be discussed during the episode today. So INFJ stands for introvert and intuitive and feeler and judging. I think I've explained the letters enough where I don't have to repeat it again, so I'm going to go ahead and skip it. But please feel free to check out any of our other MBTI analysis episodes if you want to hear a more detailed breakdown of each of the letters. With that being said, the 12 characters I picked was Natsume from Natsume's Book of Friends, Itachi from Naruto, Yuki Soma from Fruits Basket, Lena from 8686, Maya Tendo from Revue Starlight, Ash from Banana Fish, Miyano from Sasuke and Miyano, Shima from Skip and Loafer, Norman from The Promised Neverland, Geto from Jujutsu Kaisen, Sugawara from Haikyuu, and Sota from Suzume, which I think is probably the youngest character of the group in that it's the newest character. So, of those 12, the girls picked, the first one that the girls had picked specifically is Itachi on this list. And before we start off, I'm going to go ahead and say, for anyone who is curious, our overlord is an INFJ. So if anyone wants sort of an anime trending person to connect with in regards to the personality type, think of our overlord that we tend to joke and talk about. He is an INFJ in our group. So with that being said, Itachi is an INFJ. My decision on Itachi being an INFJ is actually kind of a story. I hope you guys don't mind me sharing. But
story time.
Yes. So originally, I actually thought Itachi was an INTJ back in my early college days because I kind of fell into the stereotypes of INTJs where I'm like, oh, they plan everything. Like, they're super duper, like, manipulative and... And they plan everything to a T, and they're cold and stuff like that. And it was actually one of my friends who, ironically, he says that he doesn't think he's as good at understanding people and personalities as I am. But I, you know, I have to give it to him in this regard, is he disagreed with me. He was like, I always felt that Itachi was more of an INFJ instead. And I thought about it some, and then I did some research, and at that time, I had just began my foray into MBTI, so I definitely wasn't as knowledgeable as I am today. And I said that he was correct. I have changed my mind. I do think Itachi is an INFJ. So Itachi being on this list is, first of all, most people do agree that Itachi is an INFJ. But for me personally, I actually had a bit of a journey because I misunderstood the personality types. And I looked at things a little too black and white, where I did think I mistyped him as an INTJ for that matter. One things first, I want to go ahead and put it out there, is INFJs, we talk about tropes a lot in anime, and specifically how certain personality types tend to follow certain tropes. For example, you know, ISTPs, which is like Agnes, they tend to follow the edgy, like, loner boy with a gun, you know? and then we talked about ISFPs, you know, which as a trope in anime, they tend to be the one whose head is empty, and they're just kind of, like, out there, such as Haru from Fruits Basket. And then for ENFJs, they tend to be two extremes, which is they're extraordinarily emotionally manipulative and they're very good at it, Or they're on the other end of the spectrum where they're very heroic to the point where it's like they're just the white knight in shining armor and there's nothing wrong. There's nothing they can do that's wrong. So for INFJs in particular is they are the angst characters. And I think you can honestly kind of see it in the list as well. They are extraordinarily angsty and they tend to be portrayed extremely angsty. A reason why for that is this is something unique to INFJs is that they really feel like they are so alone and cannot be understood in this world. It's very dramatic. And I know that a lot of people listening and probably Isabel and Agnes, you guys are both like probably at one point in your lives also had that feeling where you were like, yeah, like, you know, I feel like nobody understands me and stuff like that. But I cannot stress like how unique INFJs feel themselves are. I think it has to do with the fact that they are the hardest personality type to find in the world. That being said, even a 0.5 percentage sort of percent is still a lot of people because you multiply that by billions of people and that's a large number regardless. But I think that contributes to them feeling like super lonely and feeling like no one can understand them and only they can do something, the things that they are required to do. It's very unique to INFJs and that's where a lot of the angst comes from. But with that being said, though, both of you two had picked Itachi. So first of all, were you guys surprised to see Itachi on this list? Because Itachi, I will say once again, is one of those that the fandom generally agrees is an INFJ. So I am curious if you guys, you know, weren't surprised at all to see him. Or were you kind of like me where you had another sort of type, personality type in your head already and you sort of mistyped him?
Do you want to go first for this one, Isabel?
Yeah, sure. For me, I actually probably thought the same as you, Gracie. I would see him more as an ISTJ, or sorry, INTJ instead of an INFJ. And yeah, I just thought that his character was, you know, and I think you see it more towards the end. I think if you didn't have that context of the end of him and, you know, his actual relationship with his family and towards Sasuke and everything. Yeah, if you didn't have that, then, you know, obviously you might have thought a different way. But yes, it seems like, you know, he has this, you know, sense. And, you know, Itachi, when he grew up, he had grown up in a world where, you know, there's a lot of war going on. And he had to grow up older than he was. Like, you know, he was always, like, how do you call it? He was older than his actual age and always being super mature. And so I think, you know, he kind of wanted that for Sasuke, but he didn't do it, obviously, in the best way, I feel like. Poor Sasuke. But yes, and in general he acts alone as well, which, you know, for him, I think for these types of characters who are INFJ, they probably feel that they're the only ones who can be that change or find it inside themselves to be able to do that compared to other people. And usually I think they are the type of people that we see. I think we see that in the list as well, of anime characters, that these are the people who are kind of advocating for that change. They may do it without other people knowing, and that I think that's a big thing as well for Itachi, is that he tries to do it in secret without anyone else knowing, and only limited people actually knowing what he actually thinks or how he wants to perform his actions. So those are some of the reasons why I chose him, obviously, and some of the things that I noticed in his character as well. But yes, Agnes, what about you? What were your thoughts on Itachi?
I agree. If I didn't know anything about MBTI and you told me that he was an INTJ and me not knowing the words, I'd be like, okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
Know the difference. But after realizing so much about MBTI and then noticing that I am actually surrounded by a lot of INFJs in my own life, it just immediately clicked. And I'm like, ah, yeah, I 100% see it. You know, by Gracie's words, it's the vibes, right?
Right, exactly.
I don't know how to explain it. It's the vibes. I think Gracie put it very aptly, though, is that they have this very angsty side of them that is not well hidden. And it basically kind of screams at you like, nobody understands me. And you're just kind of standing there as the ISTP. You're kind of standing there, you're just like, dude, just tell us. Just tell us what we need to do. But the
INFJ typically
clams up. And when they clam up, that's when their angsty side flares the most. It's like a big red sign of like, do not talk to me about this topic again.
So fun fact is, oh, go on. Sorry, Agnes.
Oh, I was just going to also follow up with the idea of like with INFJs, I've also noticed that they're very incredibly selfless and very dedicated towards a particular unit, whether it's a person or family. Mm-hmm. And that's when they're kind of like they're where their morals and values end up lying is towards that is dedicating themselves towards that family or that unit. And as a result, if they have, let's say, like bad relationships or they have conflicting relationships with their family and their unit, like how Hitachi does with his village, his whole angst mode like flares up, right? Because that's exactly what happened to Itachi when he actually had to murder the whole Uchiha family. But there was no way for him to communicate that or tell that to Sasuke because it's like Sasuke's young, Sasuke cannot understand. But obviously there's a lot of fans who are just like, no, you could just take Sasuke with you and just become Rogue Nin. And Itachi's like, no, I can't do that. He must stay in the village kind of thing. Right. So it's very clear from a very comically kind of INFJ depiction of being very angsty and protecting and loving your family unit or your person so much, but you yourself have a difficulty communicating that to the family and asking like, how can I help or what can I do?
No, you're precisely correct. And what I was going to share for a fun fact is Itachi accidentally broke one of my best friends who's an INFJ. So the story was, in college, I was angsty about Itachi, namely because I was frustrated about his whole shtick with the INFJ thing, where it's like, no one understands me, I can't ask anyone for help, it's all on me, and I have to do it myself, which, you know, if our overlord is listening, by the way, you do struggle with that, I just want to say that out loud right now. And so,
it's okay, yes. Kwok, we all struggle with things, including myself, don't worry, we all get bashed in these episodes, it's okay. I got bashed earlier, so do not feel bad.
But specifically, I was really frustrated by that because I will say that's a pretty key difference between ENFJs and INFJs. You know, ENFJs, they do a lot of things themselves, but I will say that we won't hesitate to, or more like we think that if things are more accomplishable and things are, you know, things are actually easier if you have people involved in helping you, especially those who are motivated by sort of the same thing. And so that's a very key difference in way of thinking, because ENFJs and INFJs can be extraordinarily similar to each other. And I was being frustrated about that with Itachi, because his he has a gorgeously written tragic end. It's very well written. I wouldn't change a thing about it. But it was also frustrating in a personal sense, where I was like, you could have avoided that if you didn't have this weird thing where it's like everything's on your shoulders. But well, I was just thinking that to myself, and then my INFJ roommate, you know, I was rooming with three girls at that time, but my INFJ roommate was walking to the living room doing something. I forgot what she was doing, and I looked at her in the dark, and I just go, why don't you trust anyone? And
damn.
And she, like, froze. Like, I didn't even...
Oh, that's cold. That's a cold delivery.
I didn't even
mean
it that seriously, because I was thinking of Itachi, but instead she froze, and she was like, well, and she just slowly sat down onto the couch.
Oh, no.
And then I was like, oh, I hit a nerve. I accidentally hit a nerve. And so,
Gracie, you need to stop doing this.
And so she just slowly sat down. She's like, well, it's not on purpose. It's just you keep thinking to yourself, like, you know, what if people don't understand my perspective? And I was just like, oh no, what have I done? Like,
oh no. You opened a can of worms.
Yes.
And literally.
And then I was like, okay, let's just assume that's Itachi's mindset then in that regard, because she's answering me so earnestly. And then we had an impromptu therapy session by complete accident. It was not my fault. I'm not guilty anyway. So
you're guilty for uttering it out loud, you extrovert. It's know, called keep I your know. Thoughts to yourself.
I didn't dare to tell her until like months later, where I was like, you know that thing where you ended up crying because I hit a nerve by asking a question out of nowhere at like 9 p.m. at night in the living room with the two of us? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I was actually thinking of Itachi at the time. And she was so, she was like, she was just so exasperated with me. She's like, I cannot believe you made me go through this because you were thinking about an anime character. And I was just like, sorry. So, but yeah, so Itachi clearly really, I think him out of everyone on this list embodies that part the most, that sort of angst where he's like, you know, I have to do it on my own and, you know, no one else can understand. This is on my shoulders. It's my responsibility. The fate of the village is on, like, you know, is on me and I have to make it work. And if it doesn't work, then I have to force to make it work the way I need it to, which is another thing. INFJs are extraordinarily stubborn, and we talked about it briefly in the chat, but every type of stubbornness is different. For example, when ENFJs, myself, are stubborn, and you two know this, I'm just stubborn for the sake of stubbornness. And I know I'm being stubborn. I'll say, yes, I'm being stubborn right now, but I'm just not changing my mind. Versus INFJs, where they have more of a context where they're like, no, but this is right. This is right, so it has to happen. That's very much Itachi throughout the series, where he's like, this is the right thing. Like, Sasuke has to do this. Because, like, when he manipulates Sasuke as well, he's just like, because it's right. Like, this is right. Like, he can't think of anything beyond the scope of what he's already planned out. So he really shows that as well. My last thing I'll go ahead and note about Itachi before we move ahead is that an interesting thing about INFJs is that they're honestly very talkative. And that has to do with the fact that they're...
Yes, they are. they really yes, are.
They're very talkative.
I just had a moment of PTSD.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, Agnes, you know this, but they can talk for 4 hours without, like...
I know they can talk for 4 hours. Yeah. I just make it stop before it hits 4 hours. I make it stop at one.
So me, which you guys know, I have a lot of energy when it comes to talking. My INFJ friends can tire me out with their talking, where I'm just like, okay, I think I'm tired. Like, I think I need to stop now. So.
Am I allowed to give a small personal story with Choir Overlord?
Yeah, go ahead. Please.
A couple years ago, I don't remember when it was exactly, but I dropped by his place because we've known each other for quite a while, and I dropped by his place to pick up something, and I ended up, and it was going to be maybe like a 15-minute stopover, say hi to his parents and pick up the stuff, and I didn't leave until maybe like an hour and a half later, where I was literally sitting on the floor in his living room, and he was just talking about anime trending. He was just talking about things within anime trending, things that we need to do, and I was just like, and he was so passionate about it too, and I was just like, I want to leave. I just came to pick something up, my dude. Please let me go. But in and of itself, the earnestness of an INFJ to talk, I think, is really interesting because their whole angsty mindset of like, nobody understands me, because they aren't able to initiate it or ask someone if they can talk to them. But the moment that person comes at the opportune arrival, if they just show up at their door like I did, it will just prompt them to just talk on and on and on and right. on. And that's like their outlet. And it's like a burst. It's like, it's not like a cute, steady stream of like cute chit-chat conversation like what an ENFJ would do. It's literally a megaphone of everything that they've been thinking about for the last 5 days.
You know, here's the thing is because their auxiliary function, so that's their second level of cognitive function, is extroverted feeling, which is my dominant function or ENFJ's dominant function. So here's like both the pros and the cons. So being an extroverted feeling dominant, that is the level that we are in most control of. So ironically, yes, we can talk for a very long time as ENFJs. We're also capable of controlling it very, very well because it's like the top layer. It's the easiest thing for us to control. Versus INFJs, it being the second layer makes it not quite as easily malleable as it is for ENFJs, which results in that floodgates thing. And another ironic thing is it's kind of a learning curve for them to realize that they need to talk to people to feel better. Because, and some people certainly, INTJs, and here's a clear difference between INTJs and INFJs. INTJs are introverted feelers. They have to process their feelings internally. In fact, if you try to force them to process it outwardly, they completely shatter and freak out at you. Like, they can't. They just can't. You need to leave them alone and give them space and let them process their emotions internally and then have them come back afterwards. But with INFJs, it's completely opposite. They actually do need to say it out loud. They need to have other people hear them. They need to interact with other people for this. But they kind of struggle with coming to terms with that because it's their auxiliary function. And Itachi actually shows that at the very end, sadly, where he finally tells the full truth to Sasuke. And you just see his face just soften, not in the sense of because that's his brother, but like that thing that's been on his chest has finally been lifted. And you know that he was happy. Like for the first time in I don't even know how many years, he was happy and he felt okay. And it's because he's been holding all these things to himself. And in reality, what he really needed is to be able to tell someone everything that's happened. And he's just forced himself not to do it. And so, unfortunately, he learned what, you know, should do for himself a little too late in that regard. But that's another thing that's, like, I feel like is very unique to, or not unique to Itachi, but Itachi illustrates very, very well. So, another part of that INFJ-ness in him. Alrighty, so our next one is Lena. So you girls have probably already noticed that there is a strikingly lack of female characters, huh, on this list.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. I also admit to you that I am surprised by that because INFJs in real life are pretty split gender-wise. It's definitely not like an ISTP situation where even in real life there's a lot more men than women. And so it's very shocking to see that it's mostly boys and not girls. Lena is one of the two that I could very confidently say from my point of view is an INFJ. So obviously we picked one of them. And I think it has to do with the fact that we don't really write angsty female anime characters. At least that's my observation. What do you guys think?
I definitely think that's the same way because a lot of female anime characters that are written are typically there to like lift the burden of other people's emotions. Mm. Or they're supposed to be like emotionally available for the main protagonist in a shonen series, right? Yeah. So I think that's why there's a huge disparity. And that's why maybe there's even a bigger split between, like, let's say we talked about last time the ISFJ.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Where there's a more prevalence of ISFJ women in anime as opposed to men. And that might be the reason why is that a lot of females end up maybe incorrectly categorized in the ISFJ rather than being split up into other groups like the INFJ.
Mm. Okay. And so, yeah. So Lena is one of those. I think Lena, by the way, is an excellent, excellent illustration of an INFJ, an INFJ who went through a lot of growth in the series as well. And so I wanted to hear your thoughts first before I go into the parts of Lena that I thought was most interesting of her INFJ-ness that she shows. So what did you guys think seeing her on this list?
I would say I picked Lena because I had a very interesting conversation with Jack about INFJs that you later corrected with us, Gracie, that INFJs have a tendency to think that they're correct mm-hmm. because it's right, mm-hmm. and they're very stubborn in that way, right? And that was what you mentioned earlier in the podcast too. And Lena actually comes off as that in the very beginning part of 86, right? All the knowledge that she has acquired as a top-ranking military official in the Republic is information that makes her decisions correct. But when she's in the field with the other 86 members, she is quickly proven wrong that it's not just her logic and her reasoning alone that is correct, but she requires everybody else's consensus and also experience on the battlefield because technically Lena herself is also a newbie. Even though she ranked quote-unquote top class of the military, she is somebody who doesn't have a lot of actual experience as compared to other veteran operators or to actual 86 members who are fighting on right. the battlefield. And so I just wanted to talk more about that because I definitely think like that was a very good wake-up call of what an INFJ looks like when they're really locked down in their ideas of like, I'm correct, nobody can prove me wrong, and this is why I'm angsty. And then really expand on that growth for her throughout season one where she becomes more reliant on other people and is willing to relinquish that control of her being the operator so that, let's say, like Shin or some of the more experienced 86 members can take control and help her figure out like what's going on in the battlefield because she doesn't have eyes, right. really. She just relies on cute little points that are on the map, but she doesn't see the bigger picture of, you know, debris, terrain, the state of the machines, the health and the statuses of all the 86 members. So the fact that she has this great character growth from the beginning of season one to the end of season one is very exemplary of her being an INFJ. You see a little less of that in season two, obviously, because season two focuses more on Shin and the rest of the surviving 86 members assimilating themselves to the world outside and also re-entering war. But you do see, I think, a sliver of the INFJ at the very end when Lena reappears because she survived the siege at Magnolia.
Perfect. And yes, I think everything you said is very accurate to her as an INFJ. I mean, I know that you love Lena, so it makes complete sense.
I love
you
Lena.
You really analyzed her. Doesn't surprise me a single bit in that regard. So yes, excellent analysis. I mean, I have nothing to add in that regard to what you've said. Isabel, what about you when you see Lena on this list?
I'm actually surprised you even chose Lena because you didn't really like 86 that much either.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that you chose her for this reason.
Well, she was the female character on the list. I was like, okay, well, we have to talk about her.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I definitely didn't like Lena in the beginning as well. And I'm not sure if towards the end I will or will not like her. But anyway, but I did like her like confidence, I guess. That's something that I admired about her, being so confident in her own situation. Mm-hmm. Just because all the other commanders or handlers didn't like her at all. Just kind of like threw her under the bus. Or even were like outwardly, you know, shouting towards her. I don't know if I could ever handle that, but it's amazing that she could. And like still fight for it, like even though she, you know, has to take it back or has to step down a notch because there are so many people that are in higher positions than her. But yes, you know, the fact that she, you know, even when she gets things wrong with 86, she actually takes that information back and she makes an effort, like, you know, step by step towards that kind of the fact that, you know, one, she didn't know their names in the beginning and thought that she was friends with them. She learns that she's not. But then she makes that effort, especially later, to learn their names and then learn other 86 names as well. Just moving that forward. I think they're very detailed in that, making sure that she does that for future steps as well. And the other thing also that I remember is when you were talking about the chatting thing. I love that her and her friend Annette, she always has this like little
right?
coffee chat
yes.
that she needs to like release all her feelings towards her. So I really like their relationship. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
I agree. And Annette half of the time is just like, girl, you're just here for a medical checkup. Please leave.
You know what? Relatable. I too love a good gossip quarter. So, yeah. So, okay. First of all, Isabel, I think you not liking Lena is something that we all agree on. Agnes didn't like Lena at the beginning. Honestly, I didn't like her either. There is a self-righteousness to her that's meant to be frustrating. You know the author wrote that very much on purpose with how badly she got called out later by Theo, which I still think is just chef's kiss. Like, I love that dialogue so much, the way that he called her out on it. But Agnes already touched on this already, but I'll go ahead and reassert it, is that INFJs are very bound by their morals and, in fact, motivated and like moved by their morals, kind of like what she talked about with Itachi. But the issue that comes in is, what if the morals are misplaced or skewed or not exactly seeing the whole picture? And it comes to the issue, once again, of what we were talking about INFJs on, is they get into the stubbornness where they're like, but I'm right. So that's why we're doing this. I'm right. And it's very, very, very hard to break that off and realize, hey, your perspective, your lens needs to be upright a little more. It's been crooked this whole time and you didn't know that because that's all you've seen so far. And that's what Theo does to Lena, is he uprights it where she finally sees it on like a more accurate lens and a more accurate perspective, and then thus changing her actions to it, which is what makes her admirable, because this has nothing to do with personality type. I will say this depends on individual person. Some people, I'm absolutely certain, would just dig in their heels even harder and refuse to, you know, readjust their lens after getting called out for it. And Lena, as an individual, does willingly readjust her lens when she does get called out. But there was a stubbornness that's so infuriating at the very beginning when she had that. She thinks she's doing so well with those people in the 86 unit, and those 86 unit people are like, girl, like, girly, like, what are you doing? So
don't be Delulu,
exactly,
girly.
Girly, what are you doing? So I do want to say that, but The thing that I think Lena really shows off something interesting on in regards, I mean, Itachi shows it too, but Lena had such a standout moment in this regard, is INFJs are also extraordinarily capable of manipulating people. You know, we like to make fun of the fact that INTJs are known as the mastermind, the ultimate manipulator. And then, you know, as you learn about MBTI, the joke shifts more to ENFJs are the ones who are master manipulators. But INFJs are very good at manipulating too. And they manipulate differently from ENFJs. So first of all, INTJ's manipulation is completely different, and we'll get to there when we touch on INTJs. There are plenty of those that we can pick from on that list when it is time. But if comparing between ENFJs and INFJs, the two of them are more likely to use emotional manipulation to get what they want. However, the emotions that they do manipulate is different. Because let's think about Haiji, which is very different from a very different background and context as Lena. But still, let's think about Haiji, because he shows that manipulation is that Haiji manipulates people based on positive emotions. He's
coercion. It's positive coercion. That's
what it is. He noticed that. What's his name? Kazehaya? Oh my gosh, I cannot remember it suddenly. What was the other main character?
I'm also blanking out.
How did I completely forget? Kakeru. Where's Kazehaya from? Yeah.
There you go.
He does manipulate Kakeru, which drove me nuts because I saw myself, so that's why it drove me nuts. But he manipulates Kakeru not through negative emotions, but with positive emotions, appealing to the fact that deep down he still really loves running, and appealing to the fact that Kakeru is lonely. So you're lonely. Hey, look at all these misfits. I'll be your friend. Isn't that nice? Very positive emotions that he manipulates Kakeru to essentially give in and eventually commit to what Haiji wants to do. Lena, on the other hand, uses negative emotions to manipulate. So with the 86 unit, she's not manipulating them. You know, she is very genuine and very raw and very honest with all of them. So nothing's going on there. But we do see few specks of moments in season 2 where she is manipulating people. But the biggest moment, I would say, was in season 1 when she manipulated Annette.
I was just about to say that. That was a good one. Yep.
So she and Annette had a falling out over something, and she wants Annette to do something for her, and she manipulated the crap out of Annette.
She blackmailed Annette, essentially.
But she really, really pulled on Annette's negative emotions, using her guilt, using her her sadness and her sorrow, purposefully revealing at the very end, being like, oh, by the way, that childhood friend of yours, he's the one who you said that we shouldn't care about. How does that make you feel?
Cold F, let's go.
Like, with that smirk on her face too, where she was like, how does that make you feel, Annette? Does that make you feel good? No, I didn't think it did, and really pulling on that guilt in Annette to essentially get Annette to do what she has been wanting and needing Annette to do. ENFJs aren't likely going, like, if an ENFJ was there at that moment with Annette, she definitely, in that case myself, I would have much been more manipulating on the positive side of things instead of being like, hey, do you feel guilty? Like, let me use your guilt to get you to do what I want. Instead, I'd be like, what, do you feel nostalgic? Let me use your nostalgia to get you to do what I want. It's similar actions, but using completely different side of things. And INFJs, when they manipulate, are much, much, much more likely to be pulling on your negative emotions to get you to do what you want to do versus ENFJs, who are much more likely to use positive emotions to do so. So that's a very clear distinction between both of their emotional manipulation that Lena really just had. And now that I said it, I'm sure you guys can see how Itachi does it to Sasuke and other people around him using that negative emotions. But Lane is has such a standout scene in that regard that's, like, very present in my mind that I thought is just kind of perfectly illustrates that in a way that, like, beyond other characters does on the list. But I don't know if that's surprising to you guys, but it sounds like Agnes was having a ball listening to it.
It was such a cool, that episode, that part was really cool. I really liked it. Because I was thinking the whole time, I was like, how are the 86 members actually going to escape? Like, what is going to happen to them if Lena doesn't do anything? And I wasn't expecting her to pull out that manipulation card on Annette, and Annette having such a significant role in the escape of the 86.
Right.
Or rather, not so much the escape of the 86, but her assistance with the para-raid for what is actually going about to come at the end of season 2.
That's exactly it. And like I said, in season 2, you'll see bits and pieces of it when we do see her. We don't see her that much in season 2, to be honest, but in those bits and pieces we do see of her, we actually do see her actively manipulating her higher-ups using those negative emotions to get what she needs done. And so it's like, but that's, without question, there was a standout scene that really, really showed it. I do also want to note, because now it sounds like, you know, INFJs and ENFJs are these emotional manipulators who are like, you know, scary, you should stay away from. In the case of Lena that we're talking about here, is obviously her context matters. She's in a country that is extraordinarily racist and basically has segregation and internment camps and all that stuff. And what she's doing is she's on the side of the people who are discriminated against, and she's doing stuff to help them. So I think putting that into context makes it a lot more clear now in regards to why she pulled that out. Majority of INFJs are good people who would only do that really if they feel like there is a situation that's necessary, which in Lena's case, it's literally saving their lives. That's why she thinks it's necessary. Otherwise, you don't see her doing that because it's not like she has joy in doing it, and there's no reason in her doing it. It's the same thing. So that's one thing I just wanted to clarify. Okay, and with that being said, we move to Norman from Promised Neverland. I think you guys are starting to see how all of these are super similar to each other now. Yeah. But I guess, why did you guys pick Norman on this list?
I mean, even as a child, I just think that the INFJ aspect of him is so much more prominent as compared to the other characters. Because we talk about how, like, you know, you shouldn't be typing children with MBTI, childs, little human things that run around and scream. You shouldn't be tagging children with MBTI because personalities do change over time.
Right, yeah.
But Norman, because he's just very mature for his age, quote unquote, as compared to, let's say, Ray or some of the other children, he's much more mature in the sense that he knows that he needs to help the children escape from Gracefield, and that he wants to be able to ensure their arrival, and that he has to think like multiple steps ahead of the enemy. But at the same time, it locks him into that same angsty box of like, no one can understand me,
yep.
Even though everyone around him at the Gracefield house is more than capable of helping him because they're all very goddamn smart, first of all. And second of all, they all know and they all cherish the same values as Norman, but he doesn't quite ground himself with that trust, even with Ray and what's her name again? Emma. And not even with those two does he even trust the entire plan with them. So that's why the whole reveal of him being alive and sort of like working behind the demons' backs is what really surprises Ray and Emma.
No, that's exactly it. I feel like his is so simple now that we've talked about the other two very extensively. But is there anything you want to know, Isabel, knowing that what you've heard so far of INFJs and thinking about Norman as a character?
Sorry I cut you off earlier, too. I was just like,
No, you're fine. But like for me, Norman, I don't know what you guys think about this INFJ, because we talked about a little bit about this before the podcast, but like, the fact that they're also very selfless, yes, in a sense, like they put other people's comfort, yes, above them. And I don't know, the way that I saw it in the show, or whenever I see shows, I always think maybe the opposite because of how they outwardly seem, because they're so charismatic and things. I just think, I personally thought that they were more kind of selfish in a sense, pushing up their own agenda, they think they're right, etc. But then internally, it seems like, because I probably don't see this, and for me at least, I don't talk to Kwok as much as you all do. So I'm like slowly seeing it. And then, but then like, yeah, it took me a while to see this from them. But the fact that they actually care a lot for other people aside from them. And then sometimes, yeah, they put themselves second. And yeah, I don't know if that's self-destructive.
Oh, it's very self-destructive.
But it seems like they're very, it's incredibly self-destructive. Very, very, very kind though.
I don't know how many times I've seen it. Well, I see it more often because I am very close to Kwok. But other INFJs that I do know, on one side, they do look like that charismatic type of person, selfish because they push that agenda that they know that they're right. But internally, they are an absolute mess because what they think they're doing is right is what's helping the people. I don't think I've ever seen an INFJ enjoy themselves doing something that they like and not because other people want them to like it or other people are pushing it onto them. Yeah.
Okay.
Or either that or it's because maybe the majority of the INFJs that I've seen are very toxic. Not that Kwok is toxic, but other INFJs might be more toxic than others and they don't look like they're enjoying themselves. But I've seen a lot of INFJs that are very selfless and can become very self-destructive very quickly.
Yeah, so Isabel, you actually touched on a point now that I was actually going to pull up for Ghetto, but now I might as well do it now with Norman, is you were saying about how they come off very charismatic and cool and like they know what they're doing and stuff. And Agnes also talked about it where it's like inside their messes and chaotic. Actually, yes. Everything about that is yes. INFJs have this weird thing where they come, because of their charisma, they come off as very cool and feels like everything's under control. Kwok even gives that off to people. Like, when I first met Kwok, that's exactly what I thought. And Mehdi, who is not on this call, so we're going to talk stuff about him. But anyway, Mehdi, who will be missed. Mehdi, who will be missed and is always dead. He also talked about the fact that, you know, when he meets Kwok, he's like, oh, wow, this guy really has everything under control. He's really cool. And then you get to know him and you're like, oh, wait, he's a mess. And so basically that is an INFJ thing. I'll even say my friend who I love, you know, I met her and I thought she was really cool. She's one of those cool, chill people who has everything under control. And then the more I know her and then like a year later, hints in the living room, me going like, why don't you trust people? Her being like, well, it's like slowly lowering yourself down on the couch. It's like you find out that they're actually very chaotic inside and they're kind of a mess inside as well. And Norman is exactly that. I mean, he gives off that vibe that everything's fine. He has everything under control and everything. And even though the second season butchered it, at the very least, we do see it in that regard. At the end, he is really just completely in over his head and needs help and doesn't know how to get out of it, essentially. So Norman also shows that as well. And actually, that's honestly a good lead into the next character on this list, which is Ghetto, on this list, because that ability to mask how he really is feeling inside is eventually what led to, unfortunately, his fall from grace in the first place. So Ghetto is the only one, I think, on this list that is an antagonist. I'm just now realizing that. Very interesting. So I think that was why I wanted to make sure to add him. So Ghetto is the only antagonist. And but he was a protagonist at one point, but then he became an antagonist. And his fall from grace literally has to do with the fact that he was too good at masking how he was actually feeling and how he was internally struggling. Because Shokul and Gojo, who are his two closest people who know him, and who really, really know him for that matter, they couldn't tell that he was emotionally struggling at all. Like, in the second season in particular, there was, when we find out their backstory, there was a particular moment where Gojo even noticed, physically speaking, that Ghetto had lost weight and even called out to him, was like, Suguru, like, you lost weight, is everything okay? And Ghetto was able to so easily and casually respond back saying, oh yeah, I did, it's like the summer heat, it's just too hot, and I haven't had an appetite lately because of that. And the Gojo and Shoko kind of laughing about it, be like, wow, you're so sensitive to the heat and you know, like, you're losing weight, and brushing it aside like that they didn't notice what was going on internally inside him. And if any, and it's largely, you know, speculated by everyone, not just the fandom, but in universe characters, and especially by Gojo and Shoko, is that the two of them, if they had actually noticed what was going on with Geto, they probably could have stopped him from his fall from grace and saved him and still be the person that they were friends with, that they knew him as. But because they didn't, because he was too good at masking that side of himself to other people, his two closest people, and arguably his closest person, which is Gojo, couldn't even tell. And so when his fall from grace happened, Gojo was in shock. Like, he couldn't believe it, and he couldn't fathom it. Like, the scene was really well done, but essentially, after the teacher told Gojo what Geto did, Geto, like, murdered a bunch of people. Of course he did. and Gojo kind of just stops, and he just goes, huh? And so the teacher repeated it again, and Gojo starts freaking out because he's like, I heard you the first time, but that can't happen. That can't be true. That's not him, because he masked it way too well. His charisma and his ability to appear like nothing is wrong was just so solid that even the closest person to him couldn't tell what was going on inside, that he was essentially panicking and just being a chaotic mess internally. The other thing about Geto, I'm just going to go ahead and say, is we touched on, this is, Geto is an example of antagonism, of what happens when the emotional manipulation goes too far. You know, in Lena's context, we've all agreed that what she's doing is actually more of a protagonist move, even though it sucks that she did it to Annette. She's doing it for the sake of saving people, for trying to help discriminated people rise up against their government and, you know, saving their lives and trying to give them better lives for that matter. But in Geto's case, he manipulates people using negative emotions to funnel his cult. And essentially that cult is what provides him a lot of money and a lot of spirits for him to, or a lot of curses, sorry, not spirits, for him to gain power individually and on his own and to spread his very, very warped message. And so we see here a classic example of an INFJ villain where specifically the emotional manipulation has gone way too far, and in the context that it's just simply not okay and it's not acceptable for that matter. But then there's the idea that Geto is convinced that what he's doing is the right thing and he's not changing his mind in that regard. So Agnes, I know that you aren't caught up with Jujutsu, but you said you were willing to pick Geto because Isabel picked Geto. So I'm gonna go ahead and ask Isabel first, you know, why did you pick Geto in this circumstance?
Yeah, I pick Geto good just because his character development or change, I guess, into a protagonist, into an antagonist, was pretty interesting to see, just because I feel like I don't see that too often, or kind of like depicted in the way that it was in Jujutsu Kaisen, and just made it more impactful, and not the fact that Gojo and Shoko didn't see it coming type of thing, whereas we as the audience obviously could kind of see it. Seeing him in his moments, but then you have to realize that they didn't see him in those moments, and most of the time he was alone processing those feelings. But I don't remember what that person said to kind of like start the fire, that one of the, I guess, second years or somebody, Yuki, that talked to him about, you know, his philosophy. Yeah, Yuki was talking to him about, and how that kind of like switched, like flipped the switch in him to think about things in a different way, which, like, I guess changed his whole perspective of, mm-hmm. you know, his sense of justice, I guess. And that's the reason why he was able to do that, which I found so intriguing, that like he was able to do that. Like, he was one way, and then at, you know, this amount of time wasn't that much time that he had changed. And then after that, he's just so, stubborn in that he'll follow this path. Right? Because if you think of it, because Gojo was almost turning into antagonist himself, you know, when he basically realized that he had all this power and he could basically do anything. And then Geto was the one who stopped him from doing that because his sense of justice was like, this is wrong. And then from that, obviously, changing that and then thinking that it's okay to be, you know, it's okay to kill people and just going out on a rampage just made it so crazy. So instead of, I guess, helping, people, it's kind of interesting, though, that when he does develop his own cult group, the people to him, and you'll see this later in the second part of the season, where the people that were under him actually really like trust him and really like confide in him. That kind of contributes to his charisma and also how he's able to attract people to him, even though he started off basically alone and changing his perspective as well. But yeah, I just really like the details on Geto overall. So that's what I wanted to say. But Agnes, I don't know if Agnes had anything to add to that or if you had watched any of the scenes from JJK recently.
I've heard Gracie just cry about the KFC breakup scene so many times.
Oh my God.
And I've heard similar stories from other people, but I have yet to watch it. But I am a bit excited to see the ultimate downfall and the ultimate fall from grace from Geto later.
It's a very sympathetic situation because you really are like, if anyone had noticed, if anyone had said anything to him, to be like, when he says like, yeah, everything's fine, and just be like, no, you're not fine. Let's talk about it. You know, what's going on? Talk to me. He probably would have been okay, but he didn't because that darn INFJ is too good at masking themselves. So at appearing fine and calm and collected, and they, yep, and that's just how it works. So I do want to note that I am in minority here. So this is one of those cases where people online think that Geto is an INTJ. I do seriously disagree with that, though. I've seen arguments of people with INFJ-ness because, you know, first of all, it's a little hard for me to describe why. It's because, as Agnes already joked, I operate on vibes, but and I do have very, very close INTJs in my life who are, it's just like nothing like him. But I definitely think the second thing is that emotional manipulation. So we're going to talk about it more with INTJs. But in all honest to goodness, INTJs are honestly not very good at emotional manipulation. They're much more good at situational manipulation. In fact, they're very, very good at situational manipulation. But emotional manipulation, not really their thing. If anything, it's actually kind of like pulling teeth to them because they don't really like thinking or talking or hearing about emotions, much less processing their own. So they're very bad at trying to, or it's like a huge effort for them to try to do it themselves, even if they know they're capable of it. So they're much better at situational manipulation. And what Geto does in the series as an antagonist is extraordinarily emotionally manipulative. He is using negative emotions to get people to his side, to believe in his cause and to work for him versus what an INTJ would do, who would honestly be much colder and much more detached to the whole situation. So that's like my one little tidbit about Geto, because I do know that there are people who disagree with that, but I'm pretty certain that he is an INFJ. Alrighty, so we have time for just one more, I think. You know, on our list of potential ones to talk about, there's Natsume, Ash, Shima, and Sulta. Is there any one in particular that, or maybe instead I'll have both of you guys just ask me a question about one of them. If you guys have a question about one of them, I can do that.
I'm pretty flexible with either.
I want to talk about
Sulta. You want to talk about Sulta? Okay, let's do Sulta. I'm pretty sure.
No, I just want to ask a question to Gracie. Why did you pick Sulta, the chair?
Why are you calling him the chair? Honestly, the answer is pretty simple. I saw his name on a list, but it immediately, it's like lightning striking. I saw that name and lightning struck, and I was like, yes, he is an INFJ. I think everything about him is very INFJ, but I think he also showcases the whole, you know, I must do it on my own. I mean, he literally says it verbatim to Suzume in the movie. He was like, this is my responsibility, and in fact, it's my fault to get you involved. I must do this on my own for the people, you know?
Yada, 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 like, dude, chill, just ask someone for help.
And Suzume's like, you're a chair, and you need to get on the subway. I mean, she was nicer than that, but basically that's what she said, is you're a chair, you need to get on the subway. So
you know what this interaction reminds me of is that one meme of like the grandma like just rambling on and then this younger girl next to her being it's okay grandma, let's just put you to bed now. I feel like that's Suzume and Sota's relationship, where Sota's like, I must do this alone, this belongs in my family bloodline for generations, and Suzume is like, okay dude, let's just get you on the subway, you're a chair. Now just chill a bit, okay?
Yeah, Yeah, so I mean that's really the reason. I will say Suzume is probably or Sota is probably one of the healthiest INFJs on this list. You know, most of them have a lot of trauma associated with them. But Sota has, like, you know, obviously his parents' expectations and stuff, but from what we've seen of him, he's honestly pretty well balanced. He has friends, he's going to school. You know, he wants to be a teacher, and he from what I've seen, at least in the movie, it seems like he's very passionate about it, which is great. And overall, it's just a very gentle and kind person. So I think he's probably one of the healthiest ones. I mean, obviously, Miyano and Sugawara are probably the most healthiest one on the list because they're in a slice of life anime where nothing bad happens. So they're fine. But I think, like, Suzume, Sota is probably one of the third one after those two. I will say Sota also, like, really comes out with that INFJ empathy at the very end, which I think really works with his powers and, like, what his purpose is. Because, you know, Suzume is a movie about the identity of Japanese people and how natural disasters are part of their culture and part of their identity. It really much shapes who they are, just knowing that where they live one day could be easily destroyed by something beyond their control, beyond humanity's control, honestly, for that matter, and lose loved ones and their lives in the process. And his empathy every time where, at the climax where he says, you know, we walk beside death every day, but even still we live and we live our best. Like, that sort of empathy that INFJs have for people and as a whole, I think really represented him very well. And I also thought that was like a moment, like a shining moment of him being an INFJ. So yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. That was very awesome.
Agnes, we still Agnes, have time. We honestly still have time. So go ahead and let me know what's the one you want to ask about.
I want to ask about Ash because there's a pretty big misconception online about Ash being ISTP. So when you mentioned this here, I was like, oh, this is interesting. I want to hear what your thoughts are about Ash.
Yeah, so Ash, what's funny is I had decided Ash was an INFJ back when it first aired. And funnily enough, someone had DM'd the Anime Training Facebook Facebook Messenger and even said, like, this is a message for Scorpio. That's my my pen name. And so I was like, oh, this is a message for Scorpio. You know, I know you do MBTI stuff. I was kind of curious to hear if, you know, you can do an MBTI analysis for Ash. And I actually wrote her a full Word document and sent it to her. She was very pleased and, like, satisfied with it. She herself, she told me, was an INTJ, and she felt she really related to Ash, and that was why she thought that maybe Ash was an INTJ. But after reading what I wrote, she was convinced that he was an INFJ. I really genuinely think that the audience thinks that Ash is an ISTP because of the fact that he's that loner sort of boy who does everything on his own and stuff, but I think so. Here's my biggest reason why I think Ash is an INFJ and even beyond INTJ, because INTJ I can actually see the argument for it, but because he is extremely paranoid and plans everything out to the T, and you have to follow it, but I think people mistake that because he is very adaptable in, like, stressful situations, so they're like, J's can't do that, that's something P's do, you know, sort of thing. But I also think we have to keep in mind the context that he literally grew up in that environment. I mean, in a particular type of environment, no matter what it is, you kind of have to be a certain way if it means it's easier to survive. My mom is a hardcore J, but because of her life in China during a time that was extraordinarily hard to live, she is actually very adaptable in social situations, like a switch flipping on and off in that regard, which you wouldn't think is possible because she's a J, but she is capable of doing it. And so that's kind of my interpretation of why Ash is so adaptable in those stressful situations, because I'm like, that's been his life since the very beginning. I think it's just part of him now. But the part that really makes me think Ash is an INFJ is that Ash desperately needs to talk to people.
Got it. Yeah, I see that now. Okay.
I feel like that answered your question instantly. Like,
knowing me, I'm the type of person who's like, I don't like talking to people. No, thank you. Absolutely no. I will the weird ISTP part of me is like, I'll figure things out on my own, even if it's my own feelings, even if I am incredibly incompetent at it. That's like the whole motto of it. But for the INFJ is like, nobody understands me. But in reality, like when you talk about your roommate, needing that person for them to be able to talk about their feelings and process it is like something that really helps them understand everything around them.
Yeah. Essentially. And that's what AG gave to
that,
Ash.
That's what AG does. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, I like how that immediately clicked. And I heard the click too. You were like, oh, like it just clicked.
It was very audible, wasn't it?
And you know, I'll even say to the people listening, you know, Agnes and I are very good friends. And I definitely think we've touched on some, you know, emotionally intimate / vulnerable moments that, you know, girls will talk about in that regard. But there is a marked difference that when Agnes talks to me about it versus some of my other girlfriends who are Fs, I'll go ahead and say, because it's so, even on her most vulnerable topics, she's extraordinarily objective about it. It's very fascinating to me. And so, like, sometimes it just reads like a Wikipedia page.
Wikipedia page.
Wikipedia page about herself.
Oh, yeah. No, Isabel, you notice it too?
I think so. I think I'm more bothered by sometimes how stubborn you are. I'm just like, Agnes, come on, please.
Yeah, Weisel. Okay. That's a reality check for me. Thank you for
I mean, not. I don't think, by the way, I don't think it's bad that when we talk about these vulnerable, emotionally vulnerable moments, that it sounds like a Wikipedia page. I'm just saying it's different, and I've noticed it's very unique to you. And I was like, Ash is not that at all. You know, it's a completely different flavor and style in regards to when they talk in an emotionally vulnerable way. So yeah. And then, of course, and I mentioned this with INTJs already, INTJs, they actually need that silence and their alone time to process their feelings on their own, which, as we've all seen, is extremely disastrous for Ash, because if anything, he spirals when he's by himself and he's alone. So he needs the exact opposite in that case. And I think that argument was ultimately what really, like, you know, not that we were arguing or debating in the first place, but that argument was what sold the girl who originally requested it, because she was like, oh, that part right here, like, I know exactly what you're talking about, because that is exactly who I am as an INTJ. Like, I need that alone time to process things and let me run through my emotions and then get it out of my system and then go back and make and pretend and just be okay, versus seeing Ash on screen, she completely agrees with, like, yeah, he needs someone to hear him talk, to connect with him emotionally, to have him say all these emotional things and have someone tell him it's okay, what happened to you sucked and you absolutely deserve to feel this way, like that sort of thing. She's like, I, like, you know, I see it with him on screen, and that you're right, that part of him is very much not me in that regard. So alrighty, so everyone, thank you for everyone for listening to this episode. As always, our MBTI analysis is a little bit longer, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. And we will be back next week with another fun topic. So please let us know in the comments the next MBTI type you'd like us to hear about, or you can message us at girltaku_AT on Twitter. But other than that, we hope you'll be here next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.